What's up, Dialed fam? Welcome to episode 177 of the Dialed Health Podcast. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and head coach here at DialedHealth.com, which is strength training for cyclists. And on today's episode, I get to sit down with Keegan Swinson fresh after he completed the quote-unquote Spirit Tour. This was a five-day gravel bikepacking trip that he did with a couple other pros. In fact, I'm looking at Russell Finsterwald's Strava ride from the Spirit Tour. He put this route together, and it was a total of 517 miles, over 32,000 feet of elevation. Their total moving time in the 5 days was 33 hours, average speed of almost 16 miles per hour. And what's so insane about that is that it includes a hike-a-bike, which you'll hear about from Keegan himself, and they burned almost 30,000 calories. So I wanted to know why they did this, why they put it at this time of year, and how it integrates into their actual training protocol, because it's not like these are just some random dudes going out for a big adventure. I mean, these are some of the top gravel pros from the US, and Keegan is one of the top dudes in the world. So I know there's a method to the madness, and I wanted to get into the details about that, and then also hear about setting up the route, some of the logistics that come along with that, also about bike setup. He posted on Instagram how his bikes have evolved over the past couple of Spirit Tours that they've done, and we're going to get into all those details, and along the way, he has great fueling tips, hydration tips, and things to make the whole effort just that much more enjoyable and make sure it's kind of purpose driven. So I hope you love this episode. I was so grateful to sit down and pick his brain about this. And what's even cooler is that you guys will hear that there's going to be an opportunity for you to join him on something like this at the end of the year, but stick around to the end of the episode and you'll hear all about that. So I hope you guys love this episode. Please share it with a buddy that you would love to do this with, and also share it to your Instagram story. Just screenshot that you're listening to it or use the direct link share from Spotify, and make sure you tag myself and also Keegan. Really appreciate the support. So without further ado, let's dive in. All right, Keegan, I have been following the Spirit Tour the last couple of years, but more than ever this year. You guys have been doing an awesome job documenting this bikepacking trip. So I really want to know what inspired the trip itself and the timing of the year, how it incorporates into your training schedule. Give me a little rundown on what really started the Spirit Tour.
Yeah, it's funny. So I think back in, man, it might have been 2020, like before COVID, Russell and I were just going to go do like a little like credit card tour on road bikes. And then some weather rolled in and the whole thing, we just canceled it because it just wasn't going to work. And then, you know, race season came, training, all that. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're in full swing. And then 2021, we decided to try again, but we had Kerry Werner and Ryan Standish come along and we actually were able to do it. We did it on gravel bikes. And you know, it's funny, like we called it the Spirit Tour because in a way we were like almost poking fun at the spirit of gravel, you know, like trying to like figure out like what everyone was talking about. Like we never really hadn't raced a whole lot of gravel, hadn't ridden a whole lot of it. So, you know, we just set out and we're like, I'll just go rip around the desert and kind of see what it's about, you know? And I think we all had a lot of fun. Like it was one of the best times I've had on a bike, just out like doing stuff in the desert, having a good time, riding kind of sketchy trails and roads on bikes that really aren't made for it. And, at the same time, like getting some really quality training in and not feeling like training, you know, cause you're just out having a good time. So I guess in the end, you know, we did find the spirit of gravel, which is just out, you know, ripping with your buddies, having a good time, whether it be in the mountains or the desert or whatever. And then, you know, after that, we're like, well, we should do that again and maybe add a day and like maybe do some different routes and so on. So, you know, then we did it again last year. And then this year it's kind of become like one of our like favorite things of the season. And I've been looking forward to it all year. You know, it's almost time for the Spirit Tour again, like time to go out and have some fun with the boys in the desert. So it's kind of become just this cool thing that we do. And we kind of have a few destinations we try and always make it to. And then we add some new ones along the way. This year we originally planned to go to Mexico, but, there was like some gnarly border stuff going on. It just wasn't safe. So I ended up changing the plan and ended up kind of going to Patagonia instead, and which was cool. It was nice to go back there. And anyway, we made it work and had a good time. So that's kind of the origin of the Spirit Tour.
That's so awesome. And it's been really cool to see how your bike has evolved over each one of these tours. From my perspective and the post you did on Instagram, it looks like a couple of things have changed. So you have added a rear mount for the, you've added a mount for the rear bag. So it's not flopping all over the place. It looks like you're loading that thing up a little bit more. It looks like you've gone to a suspension fork. You had a Rudy 40 mil fork on there this year. And the tires have gotten so much bigger when you compare it back to that previous version. Is that because the route itself just got rowdier? Or is it because you're realizing that's just a better setup for this kind of thing?
A little bit of both. Like the bigger tires and the fork just make it a lot more enjoyable. Like you're able to ride the same terrain and have a lot more fun and just not get nearly as beat up. Also a bit safer, you know, less chance of flatting and breaking things. And then also you're like, oh, now we have bigger tires. Like we can probably take some gnarlier routes and maybe find some roads that like are even tougher to ride. Cause there was some before that, like I was barely able to ride on the 38s. And now it's like, oh, we can ride anything a mountain bike can ride on 50s. So and you can still rip across, like they're still roll fast. Like they're not that much slower across like the fast gravel roads, like in Patagonia where it's all buff. So it's really just, just kind of the evolution. You know, like first you're like, oh, this is all we need. I don't need 50s. I don't need this or that. We're just going to run the tires rock hard and just take it. And now you're like, oh, it's more enjoyable. It's probably faster to actually ride the bigger tires. So it's been kind of fun to play with different setups and kind of find what works. And then with the rack, that's like a whole, the bag and the rack are like one piece. And it's made by Tailfin. And because previously I had the traditional saddle bags and they kind of like, they bounce a bit and they like sway. And I really didn't like that feeling of like the bag, like moving and throwing off my, like the way I was weighting the bike or like trying to steer. And the bounce was also kind of weird when you go down descents, like you hit a big G out or something, the bag would almost like kind of pull you back. And the tail fin is like anchored to the seat post and it's anchored to the axle as well. Like it's got a special through axle you put in and it bolts to it. And I found that like there's zero movement with the bag. It's just super easy to get on and off. It doesn't seem to disturb like the riding as much. Like it makes the bike ride a lot more natural, which is sick. I think I found these guys through Lachlan Morton uses their stuff and he was like super, super stoked on it. He's like, yeah, you should, hit him up and try and get a bag to try. And it's been awesome. So that's been a pretty good upgrade.
Where does the bottom of the mount attach to?
So the special through axle has like little like nubs on the outside and those little clips. So you just like, you put this through axle in and then the bag just like snaps on with like these two little pins. So it comes on and off in like 30 seconds, which is pretty handy. And then it's like since it's mounted there, there's zero sway and you can like access stuff in the bag a little easier too. Cause the bag's like a roll top bag instead of like having to shove things down in the saddle bag. So it weighs a hair more than a traditional bag, but it's a lot more stable and easier to use. So I think I'm stoked on it.
That's awesome. So speaking of the weight, did you guys weigh the setups before you rolled out?
Yeah. Well, we actually didn't weigh them before we rolled out. We weighed when we were like, oh, we should weigh the bikes. We weighed when we got back and they were like roughly 43-44 pounds with like fully loaded with water and stuff. So we have about 2.8 liters of water. I had 2 liter bottles on the, like inside the bike and then had the bottle underneath. So yeah.
That's rad.
Big rigs.
Well, it's cool. Yeah, it's cool you figured out truly what the perfect bike would be for a trip like that because there is the joke about the spirit of gravel just being mountain biking. But also when you think about that type of trip, it sounds so funny to keep saying this, but you're nailing the spirit of gravel. But you're doing it on that bike because it truly is the perfect bike. Because like you said, you want to be able to handle the terrain, but also you don't want to get stuck on a flat, buffed out road and wishing you could just, spread out a little bit more. Like if you were on a mountain bike cockpit that was more cramped, it would be annoying after a while. Like the different hand positions with a drop bar. So do you feel like that was the best setup yet?
Yeah, it's funny. Like people like to call the like that bike I rode is like not far from a mountain bike, like 15 years ago or whatever. But it I still have my same like race cockpit. I have like, my 120 stem, I have my little 38 bars. And one day we pace lined for 5 hours and the whole day long, it was like 140 mile day and we knocked it off, in like just over 7 hours. So we averaged like almost 19 miles an hour. So like you can still rip on these bikes. And then when you get in the chunky, gnarly terrain, they still handle it pretty well. It's like these bikes don't really do anything really well, but they do like a lot of things pretty well. And it's like, if it's like a bumpy gravel road, it's like the perfect rig. It's like, because a mountain bike, you have these wide bars and you have the tall front end. So it's like, I mean, it kind of does everything you need. And it's the perfect bike when you're just out ripping gravel, whether it's two track, a little bit of single track, pavement. Like, I think that's the key, is to have a bike that's like pretty good at everything. So you can kind of have fun on no matter what surface you're on. And all you do is change air pressure in the tires, you know? So like the fast days, I'd run like 40 PSI, and the slower days I was running like 28 or 30. So that was really the only thing I'd change day to day. And it made a difference in rolling resistance and speed, you know?
Dude, that's a really good tip, because that's easy to manage, especially if you have a multi-day trip and you know what the terrain is. And speaking of tips in general, so with this route, how would you go about building something this big? You know, I've done some bigger routes, but I've never done multi-day stuff. And so at what point, like, do you build the route first and then break it up into how many days it's going to take? Or do you say, hey, we want to be out for this amount of time, then build the route? Like, how did that process work?
Yeah. So, I mean, Russell does most of the route building. He's really good at like using Google Maps and Google Earth. And like, he also has like these other like apps to figure out, like, I think it's Onyx, to figure out what's like private land versus what's like public, because there's a lot of ranch roads out here, and you don't want to be like, you know, and if you do have to cross their land, you have to figure out who the landowner is and call them, ask them for permission. So there's kind of a lot that goes into it. Most of the time we try and just stay on like public roads, but here and there we do like, you know, try and call landowners and get permission if it works or whatever else. Cause you definitely don't want to be trespassing and on ranch land. So it's like, we've kind of figured out how many days we want to do. This year, like, oh, we'll do maybe like 5 days. And then, you know, we kind of just figure out like, okay, we'll do kind of, we want to aim for an average of like 6 hours a day. So, that's roughly, you know, anywhere between 90 and 140 miles. Like some days might be 7 hours, some days might be six, some days might be 5.5. So that's kind of like, depending on the terrain, that's what we're looking for. And then we kind of decide where we want to go. So like, okay, first day we're going to Aravaca, then we're going to go to Patagonia, then we're going to Tombstone, then we're going to Klondike. And then we figure out like, because sometimes, you know, sure, you can go from Aravaca to Patagonia in like, I think the quickest way you could probably get there in like 58 miles or something, but we wanted like 100 miles. So we went like out the wrong way and then came back just to add time because we wanted to ride for 6 hours. So we kind of like figure out the routes based off where we're going. And then there's certain roads that we really enjoy and really want to ride. You know, there's a road out of Aravaca called Ruby Road. That's just this beautiful, stunning road. But in order to do that, like it was just going to be too short. So we just added a loop before it and came and rode that road. And then, so there's like, I mean, it's kind of a bit of an art. I mean, Russell's really good at figuring it out. And sometimes he'll send me a route and have me like look at two options. I'm like, okay, if we do this, we can go over this climb, or we could do this pass. And you know, we always have our annual Montezuma Pass race too, which is that reel I just posted in the snow. so it's always fun to like find ways to go over certain pieces of road that we really want to ride. So it's a bit of a group effort in terms of like kind of where we want to go. And then, you know, we nail down the route, and here and there we have to change things on the fly. If like, oh, the weather's looking gnarly over here, we might change it a little, or if like it happened to be muddy, we might not go a certain way. But, for the most part, you know, it's the deserts of things say fairly consistent. This year we had a little bit of bad weather, but it wasn't horrible.
Yeah, I saw you guys scraping the mud off of your tires at one point. And we talked beforehand. Yeah. You said there's about 30 minutes of hiking around some of these sections. But did you, I'm curious about this loop. Was it a perfect loop purely for the satisfaction of that? Was that like a prerequisite? Because I know how satisfying it is to just look at the map when it's all said and done and be like, oh yeah, that's a big doggy loop, opposed to huge out and backs. Yeah. this way, that way. Was that something you guys talk about? Do you even care about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been a loop. We've always tried to make it like some big loop. But this year, like for the last couple of years, we like, there's this road, you know, maybe Mount Lemmon out of Tucson. And when you're up on Mount Lemmon, you can see this other mountain range called the Galileros. And, you know, like it was kind of Russell's idea first. And then I was like, oh man, that'd be super cool. Like to ride over the Galileros. And there's really only one road over them. And we knew it would be pretty gnarly. Like a truck couldn't drive over it. You would need either a side-by-side or like a proper like done up Jeep. And then there's only one town on the backside. It's like this tiny little ranch town called Klondike, which is like 60 miles from anywhere. Like it's 3 hours drive to from there to Tucson. You know, like you're pretty out there. So we had to figure out like where to stay. And then we saved that day for the last day. Cause we kind of figured, you know, it's nice to like be on your bike as much as possible. Like hiking isn't the point, but sometimes you have to do a little bit. So we saved that day for the end because we figured there could be some walking, there could be potentially some mud and snow. So it's nice to like not, if we had done the route the other way, the bikes would have just been hammered the rest of the trip. So it's nice to finish off that way. And you know, so it was intentional because that pass, we'd never been there. It was all unknown. Whereas some of the other stuff, we kind of knew what we were getting into. So you kind of want to, yeah, save the really gnarly stuff for the end and then just, you know, buckle down and get through it. Cause it was only, I mean, it was 30 miles to get over that pass from Klondike to Mammoth, which is where the next gas station was. And it took us 5 hours. So it was like pretty proper. And if there was no snow and no mud, we probably could have blasted through relatively quick, like probably 2 hours quicker, just without having to pick mud off the bikes. And, you know, we didn't really think there'd be mud. Kind of thought there'd just be snow in the shade and then it would be dry, but we kind of got, it was like cold enough that that area had been stuck in like a freeze thaw cycle. So we got there like right as the mud was thawing out and it was just thick and awful. So, yeah, but it is what it is. You know, it's good for you. It keeps you tough.
Yeah, for sure. I think if you go out on a route that big, it's good to have that expectation that you're going to run into something like that because sure. It seems almost inevitable, even if the weather is perfect. I know out here in California, some of the terrain just gets so rocky and steep that you wouldn't be able to really ride it anyways. I know some of the guys who did the Rafa, I'm trying to think, the Yomp Rally last year kind of dealt with some of that. Mm-hmm. And so that's good to mindset wise, but also a nice tip if there is an unknown area that you guys really aren't sure about that feels like more of a gamble, maybe try and save it for the latter half so it doesn't just demoralize the entire trip.
So yeah, and then you don't want to like, you know, have no brake pads the rest of the trip and, you know, just a messed up bike. So it's nice to save it for the end and, you know, you can just like get through it, then you're home, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, like the back end motivation. And so you guys, it sounds like you had these stops, but did you also have accommodations built out beforehand? Like, do you kind of book a room in certain spots?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these towns are like, they're all super small. You know, there might only be like one or two hotels and like a few Airbnbs. So we make sure everything's arranged beforehand. So we stayed in a mix of hotels and Airbnbs, like in Patagonia, we stayed at the Gravel House, which is a pretty sweet little hotel set up there. And then we actually, the first night in Aravaca, there's this place, there's no like proper lodging there. So we stay at this campground. And it's awesome. He has like these RVs you could rent out. So you just rent out the RV for the night and you have like, he's got sleeping bags and all that stuff for us. You just rock up. And so that way we're not carrying like all the camping stuff, which makes it, you know, the bikes are already heavy enough. So it's like, it's nice to be able to get quality sleep and get proper recovery. Cause this is as much a training camp as it is like a bike tour, like fun time. So it's nice to be able to recover, have a place to stretch and hang out and not be like cold shivering on the ground. You know, I always appreciate a good bed.
Yeah. I just watched Lachlan's Tour Divide, video. And that was all I could think about the whole time. I was like, man, you know, the whole conditions are on another level that he dealt with, but not, and he went through the credit card, hotels, the stops, but it wasn't that consistent. The days where he just threw up the bivy and laid down on the ground, I was like, dude, that's where I kind of draw the line, to be honest. Like, you know, I think the fact that you are also doing it as training, and I'm sure your coach Jim Miller would appreciate this, and take that level to make sure it's productive and not just putting you in a hole is kind of the way it probably just works for you preseason, because it's not like you could do a trip like this in the middle of the year amongst all your travel and training. Was that a condition that you guys talked about beforehand? Like you and Jim, is it him just saying, all right, listen, if you're going to be riding this long and eating hot dogs at random gas stations, at least get a good night's sleep and make sure you can recover. Do you guys talk about that? I mean, or is that just something you knew?
It's just something that I wanted to do, like, especially this time of year. Like, it's like, you can, it's a bit looser, but still nice to get quality training and not like be completely wrecked after. And it's also like part of it's the fun factor. Like your bikes are lighter and you can go faster and further. And there's enough small towns out here that it's quite easy to put together like pretty sick routes without having to camp.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, Jim definitely appreciates it. Like he's stoked on the Spirit Tour and he loves like using it as a quality training block. And, like one of the days he sent me a text saying, hey, go out and like rotate at threshold for a few hours. And we just rotated and knocked out that big day. So it's like kind of, there's no like proper structure out there. It's just like, oh, we want to go hard. We're just going to go hard for a bit and, you know, have some fun and get some extra training out of it. And you know, you get to where you're going, find some quality food and, just rest. So it's a pretty good setup. You know, we also have like Myron tags along and, in case there's any emergencies in terms of bikes and stuff. So it's like, in a way, we're like self-supported, like we could do it on our own, but it's also like, it's fun to have Myron there and he adds to the vibe. And it's also nice to have like some spare parts and he's carrying some extra nutrition and whatever else, like just in case, like, you know, like shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
Cause in the end, like we don't have anything to prove, like we're there to have fun. And, so yeah, it's a good time and good little training camp.
That's really cool. Having the mechanic Myron, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Having
Myron,
him
Myron Billy Goat
out there. Yeah. The Billy Goat. See, that's why I didn't know his first name. Cause I just know him by the Billy Goat. So yeah. Having him out there, I know that you guys documented some of this too. And you had Will, incredible photographer, caption some photo and video for you. It is like the pro way to do it. And I think you are coming at it from a really good perspective. You're like, listen, like we don't have anything to prove. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Like you guys did over 500 miles, these huge days. I mean, that alone would be a huge feat. But that's not really just the point. It's not like you're just trying to prove how tough you guys are. You know, you can do this ride and you want it to be quality. And ultimately you just want it to be super fun. So I feel like it's cool that you're not putting it in a box and being like, I have to do it self-supported or I have to do it this way.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, people planning a trip should come from that perspective too. It's like, what do you really want out of it? And also, how is this going to be the most fun?
Yeah. It's like, you know, the way we have it kind of set up is like, we are self-supported, but if like, you know, we have Myron has extra stuff and whatever, but if like he wants to go home or has to leave, like we can continue on. Like we don't, and the way it is like, he doesn't have to be there, but it's just super awesome to have him there. And it like, it adds to it and it just makes it like a little more enjoyable. Like he was carrying extra never second stuff. So in the mornings we could start off with like proper fuel. And then throughout the day, like we'd stop at a gas station and get what you can get. Cause he would just go off and do his own thing. He'd go for a ride or he'd go for a little run or a hike and then we'd see him at the next destination. So, you know, we were like, which is kind of a fun way to do it, you know, so that way you get there and if someone like rips a tire or whatever, like he had extra tires and stuff like that. So it's kind of a loose self-supported program, which is nice, you know?
It's like an insurance policy. You're like literally making sure that the time invested into this trip isn't wasted because someone ripped the tire off, you know, or someone busted a derailleur or something. Yeah,
exactly. It just makes it more fun, you know, and a little less stressful. And you can like, then you can push your bikes harder. You can push yourself harder. You don't have to worry about like quite babying everything quite as much, you know? I mean, don't be afraid to like, you know, get help on if you're going to plan a Spirit Tour or your own little adventure like this. Like, it's not like, I mean, you can go out and do it fully on your own, but sometimes having a little help or someone along is a good way to do it.
So what was the best thing you ate at a gas station on this 5-day tour? Like, what was the thing that you start eating and you're like, this is hitting the spot right now? Maybe something unexpected.
Ooh, man, I think it was the last day when we went from Klondike over to Mammoth. Like I kind of thought, we thought it could take a long time, but didn't realize it would take quite 5 hours. So you need to kind of ride through lunch, whatever. And then when you get to Mammoth and also like all the stopping and stuff, like I'm still kind of only eating based off like when my Garmin like beeps and tells me to eat. So like when you're stopped messing around with the bike and the bud and stuff, like you kind of forget that like, oh, we spent an extra 2 hours and I haven't eaten the same amount of fuel. And in the end, it's also just kind of sugar and whatever, you know, you're eating gels and maybe some candy or maybe like you have a bar or whatever.
How often is it telling you to do that? Well, sorry, I want to get back to what you ate at Mammoth, but that's super interesting. How often have you set up your Garmin to yell at you and eat?
So I have it set I have an eat alert set for every 40 minutes.
Okay.
Which is seems like a pretty good amount of time. That way you're getting in like a little more than a snack, like every hour, you know? And it's nice on rides like this, cause sometimes like you zone out and you're just chatting with the guys and next thing you know, like 2 hours has gone by and you've forgotten to eat. But if your head unit's sitting down there beeping at you every 40 minutes, at least like you're like, oh, I'll throw something in my mouth. Or if you see someone else eat, then you just eat. But sometimes like you just totally zone out and forget. So it's kind of a sweet alert thing. I just started using, I think I set it up last season, before Unbound, just cause I figured the same thing would happen. I just forget to eat. And it's been really helpful even just on training days. It's pretty key when you're out there just jamming along and not really keeping track of time.
That's right.
You also set up that. Drink alerts and whatever, you know, so you can have like a drink alert every 20 or 30, then you can have eat alert. It's a handy little trick. So,
okay. Do you, with the drink alerts, have a prerequisite of like amounts? Like I know when I do any ride, I try and finish my bottle within the first hour. And so typically on like a hot day, that might be a tall bottle, but I know for me, that's like at least a start of hydration for the ride, whatever it may be. And that's kind of like an easy thing I remember is like first hour, make sure that first bottle's gone and I'm rotating the bottle and whatever carbs and sodium are in that bottle are actually in me, which is a good start. So what is your, when you hit a drink alert, what do you do?
On a ride like this, like sometimes you like the gap, like the distances between like stops are big enough that like sometimes you have to ration your drink a little bit because like I didn't want to carry a pack. And I was like, I knew it was gonna be cool enough weather that like I didn't have to have like that much fluid. Maybe it's not optimal, like, but that's what I do. So I just know that like, okay, it's, you know, we have a 5 hour push without stop. So I have to just make sure I can only drink like 400 mil an hour or whatever I decide. So I have like, you know, I have these big like liter bottles and there's like little, you know, the top that sticks out over the top of the cage. Like you can drink that the first hour, drink the second bit the next hour and kind of just like pay attention to how much you're drinking and just try and like ration it a little bit. And then on the days where there's plenty of stops, I aim for like, you know, 500 mil an hour, or if it's super hot, I'll be putting down like a liter an hour, but it just depends on the situation. But out there, normally it's like 500 mil an hour when it's like 50, 60 degrees.
But that's good to know the differences of whatever kind of ride or what the stop situation is. So sorry for the detour. That was just something I had to ask. You get to Mammoth. What did you eat?
Oh man. I was like, I found this big apple fritter in the pastry case and that hit pretty good. Also had a, you know, a little roller dog, had to get some actual protein in after that bit of a mission. So yeah, it's nice to get some, like, I don't know if I'd go as far as to call it like real food, but it is like, it's like dense food and there's some fat, some protein and salt, which is like all you're looking for. Cause after Mammoth, we still had like a 4.5 hour push back to Tucson and we didn't get back until like 8 PM. So it's nice to put some solid food in the stomach and, you know, get a little protein and fat in there for the second half of the day.
So you're saying you stopped at a gas station and you got an apple fritter and a roller hot dog?
Yeah, and that was lunch. And then, you know, found some other snacks to get the rest of the way. That day we were fully on our own. Like we didn't have the film crew or Myron or whatever, you know. So we were just from Klondike back to Tucson, we were fully just cruising. So
dude, that's actually a shame you didn't have Will there to capture that moment of you with a apple fritter in one hand and a hot dog in another. And it's so funny because and I know that you understand this as well as anybody, but it's like food that you need in those scenarios is like the opposite of food that you want to eat on a daily basis for your general health and well-being, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Like if someone would have presented you this beautiful farm to table salad with everything that you would want on it, that would be the quote unquote perfect healthy meal. That would be probably a worse decision than eating the apple fritter and the roller dog in that instance, because you're not getting any of the actual calories from it. And the like, it's not meeting the energy demand essentially. So, it's funny how that works out, but it's like at the time that was probably the perfect thing for you to get, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it digests easy, you know, then like an hour later, you're like, oh, I'm still kind of hungry. I could have eaten more. But yeah, then you get home and you're like, all right, now I'm only eating like healthy, like whole grain salad, whatever, for like a few days, trying a little bit of a detox, you know?
But, yeah.
And have then you, when we're in these towns, you... like.
Sorry, I was going to ask if you've ever gotten a hot dog in the jersey pocket. That sounds questionable. Hot dog in the pocket, but you know what I mean. Have you taken a hot dog to go?
No, normally you just woof it down there and you head out. You know, that'd make a mess because you got your mustard on there and all sorts of stuff. So,
oh, good man, mustard, extra mustard salt, on a know? Big day. Yeah, and the vinegar, dude. I think that
it's good.
The 24-hour rides I've done, mustard is that wild card food where I'll just eat packets of it because it breaks up. It breaks up the salt. It breaks up the sugar. Mm-hmm. It breaks up all of the different flavors you have throughout the day. The vinegar from the mustard just is like a reset on my palate.
Yeah, I fully agree. It's nice to like get something kind of like, it's not spicy, but it's just like a different thing other than just like sugar, you know, or even just simple carbs. Totally. You're out there eating rice cakes or whatever. And like, they're all kind of the same. Like it's like basic carbs, you know? So it's nice to get something that tastes completely different. So
then what about when you get to your destination for each day? So let's just say you've had kind of the typical ride foods. Maybe you've had a quote unquote, more of a real meal at a gas station stop, but it's like you set up shop wherever you're going to stay that night, you go and hunt down a real meal. Are you trying to kind of make up for any calories lost? Are you trying to hit up one macro in particular, like really up the protein at that meal at the end of the day? Is there anything specific you're trying to get from that more solid meal?
I mean, really just like a bunch of protein and carbs is like the goal, you know? So yeah. Some days you're having, you know, pizza is good, or you'll find like trying to find like anything with a bunch of carbs. And then like the first stop we always have is you hit the local convenience store, whatever in town, grab a couple chocolate milks, chug those, and then go back, unpack, shower, stretch, whatever, and then go hunt down dinner. And you try and, you know, get some carbs, protein, and normally try and find like a salad or like some veggies on the side just to have a little bit of health in there after chowing down on junk all day. So most of these towns are like proper places to eat, so you can find some pretty good food. Like Patagonia has a really nice like pizza place, and yeah, there's always some good stuff to find. So just eat as much as possible. The next day you're burning 5,000 to 6,000 kjs a day, so it's like kind of hard to even stay on top of it at a certain point, especially when you're getting in so late. Yeah. Like you really can only fit in like a meal and then like a snack before bed, so you just try and put down as much as you can so you can keep putting out the watts the next day.
Yeah, I think the chocolate milk's a really good late night, gotta get calories in, like, easy mm-hmm. to get down.
You can find it anywhere too, you know, any gas station's gonna have like chocolate or strawberry milk, preferably strawberry. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Well, Patagonia is becoming like a full-blown little gravel destination. Like you said, there's the gravel hotel or something. I've seen a bike shop that they have mm-hmm. there. They're kind of turning it into a little, like they're trying to make it almost ideal for someone doing this type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful spot down there. Like it's this cool little town, tons of variety of gravel. Like you have like your super buff, fast champagne gravel out in the, you know, San Rafael Valley. You got some like, you know, some blown out washboards here and there. You've got some kind of gnarly two track stuff. A few big climbs like that. There's a, can't remember the name of the pass. There's like a climb before you get into the San Rafael Valley. That's probably 30 minutes long. Montezuma Pass is also probably close to that long in total. So there's like a lot of variety out there. And it's just kind of there's just not, once you get out of town, there's just nothing, just emptiness. You see border patrol and stuff, and you can rip all the way down and like kind of roll across the border wall. And so just like kind of unique zone. Like, and you're at a little bit of altitude, you're at around 5,000 feet. So you kind of get that high desert kind of feel. So yeah, it's just a cool area. You know, I think it's pretty unique.
That's awesome. So I saw on your Instagram, you promoting the quote unquote spirit tour for someone else to experience later in November of this year. So I signed up for the newsletter. I'm excited to see what you have coming. I don't know if Patagonia is like a destination you guys are trying to make happen or what the deal is, but can you spill any beans on what the spirit tour is going to be later this year, November?
Yeah, so we're still kind of working it all out. But I mean, the plan is kind of a fully supported version of the Spirit Tour, you know? So we'll kind of have a kind of similar route, still have like some gnarly stuff, some fairly big days, but tamed down a little bit to make it a little more manageable, and, you know, have everything taken care of. So should be a good time.
But the idea is like someone could come out and do this with you, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So probably 8-10 people, something like that. We don't quite know yet how big yeah. We're going to do it. Depends on the interest, I guess. But yeah, you know, get the spirittour.com and just sign up for the newsletter and we can keep you updated as we kind of sort it out and have more updates.
Yeah. Well, I'll make sure to leave that link in the description below. And full disclaimer for anyone listening, that is what really made me want to reach out to Keegan about this podcast. Obviously, I'd want to ask him these questions anyways, but he didn't reach out wanting to promote this at all. This was me being like, whoa, you're doing this thing. Let's hear about the trip. I want to know more. So Keegan, I appreciate you giving us the full rundown on it, man. It's exciting and fun. And it's so cool to see how you incorporate this into your calendar, knowing the level that you're racing at. And I know that everyone is excited to watch you get after it this season. So dude, thank you. You know, if you want to follow your adventures this year, if anybody does, where should they do that? Are you mostly using Instagram these days?
Yeah. Kegels99 on Instagram is primarily where I am. And obviously there's, you know, Strava. That's kind of it, you know, try and keep you guys updated as to what's going on, what's happening. You know, otherwise we'll just be tapping away here in Tucson, getting ready for the season. So yeah, thanks for having me on. I mean, it's cool to, you know, I think the southern, like Arizona desert, it's a pretty cool spot. And yeah, cool. Hopefully more people get to check it out. So.
Dude, that's awesome. Well, yeah, I'll make sure that those links are also in the description as well. And we'll catch up with you soon. Thanks again, bro.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I hope you guys love that episode. Thanks again for taking the time to listen. And hopefully you have the opportunity to share this over on your social media or just share it directly to a friend that you would love to go gravel bikepacking with or just bikepacking with in general. I'd also appreciate if you could leave the podcast 5 stars on Apple or Spotify, along with a very quick little I love the podcast review. Say whatever you want, anything positive, just say Keegan's the man and drop that in the notes. That goes a long way in helping the podcast algorithm work to discover a new audience. And of course, if you want to support Dialed Health, the best thing that you can do is go to my website and get a subscription. And most importantly, start strength training today. Implement the off-the-bike training, both strength and mobility, to get the results that you want on the bike. I have over 14 programs now, 16. I'm losing track. I'm losing count. And there's a lot of exciting news coming up in regards to the product itself for improvements, for improved coaching contact support, and all these things. So go to dialedhealth.com, get started strength training today. And until Tuesday, start moving forward.